And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
We now present a special report by Mimi Rosenberg with an interview from Gaza under siege on the day before the beginning of the brutal Israeli land invasion on July 17th.
Mahmoud Abu Rama, the Communications and International Relations Director at the El Mazen Center for Human Rights Gaza, recently wrote Understanding Israel's Actions, in which he states it is essential that U.S. citizens understand that this conflict should not continue to be viewed as a symmetrical one anymore. And while they largely do not hear about it, there are vicious violations of international law against Palestinians every day, including closures, blockades, settlement activities, population transfer on our land, displacement, killings, detention, and torture. Mahmoud Abu Rama joins us now from Gaza. Tell us what has transpired in Gaza during the last 24 hours.
We had little sleep last night as a result of the continuous bombardment of houses mostly around us, and it was particularly difficult for the children. Today morning I came to the office to find out that the number of casualties, of Palestinian casualties, has risen significantly compared with yesterday evening. At least 10 Palestinians have been killed since then, and unfortunately mostly on in attacks that target civilian objects. So it's not very good. As long the longer this round of hostilities continues, the more danger that we have more serious problems with water supplies, with food, and with other issues. So the pressure is mounting on the larger civilian population. Last night, the Israeli army also dropped leaflets on at least two areas in the Gaza Strip, ordering people to evacuate their houses. I'm speaking about areas inhabited by more or less 200,000 people. Gaza is small. It cannot handle this number of internally displaced persons. People are very reluctant to go to United Nations-run shelters because the road is dangerous, and more significantly because during Operation Cast Lead in 2009, the Israeli army bombarded and attacked 11 UN shelters, killing many people. So people are not sure that going to UN shelters will be a very good option. These shelters are ready to host a maximum of 35,000 people. We are speaking about much larger populations here, and I think this is why the warnings dropped by the Israeli army are not met positively by people. People have opted to stay mostly at home, which will be, of course, a problem if the Israeli army considers the area as cleared of civilians and starts bombarding it.
Mahmoud, let's get to know you a little as well as we continue the discussion. If you could talk about your work as a human rights advocate in Gaza, which, of course, informs the comments that you've been making.
Well, we're a relatively small human rights organization. We're based in the Gaza Strip. We have three offices here. And we work on documenting and making interventions into human rights violations against the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip, whether these violations are coming from the Israeli authorities or the Palestinian authorities. We work under a difficult situation. So, for example, when it comes to the responsibility for human rights in the United States, it's basically very simple. It's the state, the government, the U.S. government, versus the U.S. citizen. In Gaza, it's different. We have multiple duty bearers, people or entities who are responsible for the respect of human rights. We have Israel as an occupying power since Israel decided to keep its control, effective control over Gaza, under international law, it is still an occupying power in that territory. And we have a Palestinian government, and still we have very heavy presence of the international community. And all these people are responsible for human rights. So what we are trying to do is monitor violations, whether committed by Palestinian actors or Israeli actors, and making interventions into them, including reporting, legal interventions, advocacy, and other interventions. Every year we monitor more or less 1,000 such violations, and we try our best to do as many interventions which we hope to be successful as possible.
Now, the media in the U.S. has barraged us with a general condemnation of Hamas and the Palestinians for rejecting the alleged ceasefire agreement that was authored by the Egyptians. Can you talk about that?
Yes, of course. I think we've seen this not only in the United States, and this is a rather simplistic way to look at the matter. I think most people miss to grasp context in which this round of hostilities happened. Now, this is only one round of many rounds of hostilities between Palestinian resistance and Israel in Gaza. It did not just happen like that. There is a larger context of occupation of Gaza and the West Bank. There is a constant policy of isolation and separation, so practically fragmenting Palestinian communities in Gaza and the West Bank, basically by imposing a serious blockade on Gaza. And on the 12th of June, 2014, three Israeli teenage settlers were kidnapped and unfortunately killed in the West Bank. The response from the Israeli government was massive, was very disproportionate, and was very harmful for the Palestinian population there. So, but I mean, I think nobody heard about the situation before this round of hostilities started. We are a human rights organization sitting here and watching every day people, patients who are not allowed to reach hospitals, farmers who are shot and getting paralyzed or killed near the border, fishermen who are shot at, arrested, sometimes killed in the sea, and many, many other forms of aggression and attacks by the Israeli government. Nobody hears about this situation. And I started with this because it's very relevant to how Palestinians in Gaza and how Palestinian political factions in Gaza view the ceasefire proposal coming from Egypt. First, Egypt did not consult with the Palestinian political powers before drafting this agreement. Second, the agreement is more or less a duplicate of the 2012 agreement that also was brokered by Egypt, and it offers mostly stopping hostilities immediately and then discussing going back to previous arrangements. The previous arrangements did not work. This is why we are here today. For Palestinians in Gaza, it doesn't make sense to have a ceasefire agreement which will ensure calm for both parties, yes, but then will leave the Palestinian population under other forms of aggression, including blockading the Gaza Strip, keeping its borders closed, and allowing for other forms of aggression and attacks on Gaza, but also in the West Bank, where colonial settlement activities continue to happen and where Palestinians are being fragmented and put under serious pressure. Any ceasefire agreement that does not look at these root causes of the situation will not be very positively viewed in the Gaza Strip. And I think this is mainly why the Egyptian brokered proposal for agreement was not accepted on the Palestinian side. Israel needs to come with a reasonable proposal, reasonable terms that could make an impact on the lives of the Palestinian population who are living under its occupation, of course.
And we are speaking with Mahmoud Abu Rama, the Communications and International Relations Director of the Al-Mazen Center for Human Rights in Gaza. And I am reminded in the 2008-2009 period where the Israeli operation cast lead killed 1,400 Gazans, and now we have over 200 Gazans killed and seem to be repeating this cycle of bombs, which takes me to your statement, which the American populace doesn't seem to digest yet, that we are not dealing with a symmetrical conflict. If you could elaborate on that, the inequities, the differentiation in power relationship with a group of people now, the Palestinians, who are essentially told to be operating off of a mere 22% of historic Palestinian land, the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, which they've actually agreed to. That's the level of concession.
Palestinian Authority is managing about 20% of the area of the West Bank. 35% of the area of the Gaza Strip is chopped as a buffer zone. So actually Palestinians are not running even the 22% of historical Palestine. But to comment on this, I think most people tend to have a short memory and think that this conflict started in 2006 or 2007. This is not correct. This conflict started way before that, in 1948, 1947, and later 1967, since Israel captured the occupied Palestinian territory, along with, of course, other Arab territory. And we have a situation here of an atypical occupation. Occupation is usually a situation where a powerful state, a powerful nation, which has the power and the resources, that is controlling another people. And this is exactly the case. We have a Palestinian community in Gaza and the West Bank who have been living for 47 years under Israeli occupation. I get very upset every time I hear statements coming from the United States or Europe stressing Israel's right to self-defense. Nobody can deny any state's right to self-defense. But this is a very distorted view of the situation. That self-defense doctrine, according to the United Nations covenant, is applicable among states. If there is a conflict between Egypt and Libya, then there is certainly an aggressor, a state who started the situation, and another state who has the right to self-defense. But it can't be held in situations of occupation. There is not a Palestine and an Israel where Palestine is attacking Israel and sparking, giving effect to its legitimate right to self-defense. We have a situation of occupation. And in these situations, it's always the fact that the initial aggressor is the occupier who started the aggression in the form of occupying the community, in the form of setting up blockades and other forms of aggression. Therefore, it's very dangerous, I think, that people look at the two parties as equal. And this is certainly reflected by the numbers during Operation Cast Lead. You said 1,400 Palestinians, actually it's more than that, were killed. And I remember 83.5% of them were civilians. At the same time, three Israelis were killed during that conflict. And it's the same here. Yesterday saw the first Israeli casualty at Erz Crossing. A man working with the army was injured from a mortar shell. So 8 days, and there's 200 Palestinian casualties and one Israeli casualty, which reflects, it's not the only way to look at the situation. What I want to say, what I want to stress, is sometimes that might be useful, and we human rights advocates prefer actually to delay the discussion about whose mistake is this, why are we now living this kind of situation, and focus more on the way hostilities are conducted. So let's say it's nobody's fault that we are into this situation, but we are in it. As a matter of fact, there are rules in international law that have been devised by every state and that have been accepted by both Israel and Palestine and the United States that clearly regulate the conduct of hostilities. And one of the main rules there in international law in times of hostilities and war is that simply civilians cannot and should not be attacked deliberately and directly. And unfortunately, what we are seeing in Gaza, this is the ninth day, is that the vast, vast majority of the attacks have been directed at civilian objects. We have pilots hovering in the sky, looking down at houses full of people and firing very heavy rockets at them and killing them by the dozens. They're wiping out families. These are grave violations of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and they are simply war crimes according to the United Nations, according to the International Criminal Court, etc., etc. What we are working on now in Gaza is that we are documenting these cases and trying to tell the UN and the world that, okay, let's not discuss whose fault is this. We can't tolerate, and the international community should not tolerate, that war is conducted this way. Civilians must actually be evaded as much as possible in these hostilities. What we are hearing from the Israeli leadership is that more houses, more civilians will be targeted deliberately to put pressure on Hamas. This is not a moral way of conducting hostilities, and not only in Palestine, anywhere.
Mahmoud, I just want to give you a further opportunity to comment on, for example, the economy minister, Bennett, of Israel has said, well, all that Hamas has to do is lay down its weapons, that they are, in effect, responsible for the killing of their own citizens, who they effectively use as human shields. And at the same time, we have Israeli Deputy Prime Minister Eli Yashi, who would say that actually we must blow Gaza back to the Middle Ages, destroying all the infrastructure, including roads and war. How do you respond to those kinds of statements?
Well, my response to the second statement is that merely saying this during hostilities, incitement to killing and not giving square to civilians and putting them back to the dark ages, is in itself a war crime. Leaders cannot make this kind of statements that will eventually hurt civilians. During hostilities, they must insist on respecting the rules of international law to which they had signed a long time ago. As for Mr. Bennett, I mean, we need to understand the background from which Mr. Bennett comes from. Mr. Bennett is a settler. He lives in a Jewish-only settlement in the West Bank that is taken from Palestinian land there, and he wants to expand the colonial settlement project in order not to leave any room for Palestinian self-determination as per the rules of international law. That's the background that minister is coming from. Now, Hamas is using us as human shields. To me, this is full nonsense. Human shielding is a very clear case in international law. There's an army or an armed group that is forcing civilians to do certain things in order to give them protection or cover. And nobody in Gaza feels that we are human shields. None of us. As a matter of fact, Israel has failed terribly in locating the locations Hamas is firing from, and that's why they have started to attack houses. It's not because we are being used as human shields. It's because of the failure of Israeli intelligence in locating these places. I mean, they're telling us every day that they have destroyed hundreds of missile launchers, and missile launching facilities, but hundreds of missiles are being fired, which is clearly a big lie. And as a matter of fact, the entire argument of Mr. Bennett does not stand at all.
Well, as we wind up this critical interview with Mahmoud Abu-Rahmah from Gaza, what do you tell the international community to do to support the people of Gaza?
The people of Gaza and the people of Israel, in this case, I think. I think we are harvesting outcomes of decades of failure of the international community to intervene in this very long conflict. We have not seen any intervention that is directed at more than shielding Israel from its actions, shielding Israel from violations, serious violations of international law. All the U.S. vetoes in the Security Council, all the Western blocs, blocking of resolutions by the United Nations that direct Israel to respect international law, the way the U.S. and Europe are intervening in the peace process, and that is taking, of course, the side of Israel, will definitely lead to situations like this. So for now, I think we are clear about a few messages that we send to the international community. First, this round of hostilities must stop. And for it to stop, human rights must be respected. We cannot expect a ceasefire without lifting the siege that is killing people and impoverishing people every day in Gaza. We can't have a ceasefire agreement that will live if we don't have guarantees that once arms are laid down, Israel will not start firing, including firing at civilians in the sea and the land. The international community has a clear obligation to provide protection and support for the civilian population under the control of any occupying power. This is a typical case for us here. Israel is not allowing us access to our natural resources, our water, our soil, and other resources, and therefore Palestinians are poorer. And besides that, there is a blockade on Gaza that has made 70% of the population poor and dependent on international humanitarian aid in order to survive, in order to be able to eat the minimum proper amounts of food. So protection from attacks that are unlawful, support to the civilian population are necessary. Once hostilities stop, I think the international community needs to review its intervention into the entire situation in Palestine, the so-called peace process that is not going anywhere, and that is being conducted under the expansion of Jewish-only settlements in the Palestinian territory in the West Bank, etc., etc. There needs radical changes into this intervention if we are to see calm and if we are to see peace between the Palestinian people and the Israeli people. I do not expect this under the current Israeli leadership, who are very radical right-wing government who do not want, I wouldn't say to compromise. We are not after a compromise here. We are after a state that has grabbed land, ruled it for 47 years, and must give it back.
Well, we are going to have to leave it there. Tremendous thanks to Mahmoud Abu-Rahmah, the Communications and International Relations Director of the Al-Mazen Center for Human Rights in Gaza. We will continue to join with you to make sure that people understand what's happening, and frankly, to join with the International Association of Democratic Lawyers and other groups who are talking about a free, free Palestine and demanding that the bombing be stopped and that the international community must hold Israel and its ally, the United States, accountable for what is effectively war crimes. Thank you so much, and do stay safe and free, free Palestine.
We thank you to get our voice out under this closure and isolation. So thank you very much.
Stay safe.
Bye.
Building a wall between friends, a wall that justifies any means for their ends, a wall between Semites, rich and poor, brothers and sisters from not so long before. Many feet thick and 20 feet high, no one can look through it and into the eye of a person you might know, to whom you might confide. Now just a stranger on the other side. They're building a wall between water and land, so we can eat fruit and they can eat sand. A wall to make sure that our orchards will grow and our kids can get fed and not need to know of the cities in ruins and the children in fear, that your fathers and brothers in tanks might be near. A wall to keep quiet that which you fear most, so you don't have to listen to your grandfather's ghost. They're building a wall between future and past, a wall to keep separate the chambers of gas from bulldozers, gunships, and the tears of a child. Dignity, love, and honor defiled.
Well, David Robax, they're building a wall, and we spent some time in going straight to Gaza for this grave humanitarian crisis that we wanted to bring you the voice of the people of Gaza.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.